Okay, this morning I'm going to talk about my second talk on the Sandokai, separation and oneness, shaking hands. And I'll be spending a few more talks on that. So if you've got a program, you can see. But if you can't see, I'll just read it, what I'm going to talk about today. So first of all, again, Sandokai, separation. Oneness, san meaning separation, do meaning oneness, kai meaning shaking hands. So here are the stanzas I'm going to talk about this morning. While human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. The spiritual source is clear and bright. The branching streams flow in the dark. Grasping at things is surely delusion. Identifying with oneness is still not enlightenment. All the objects of the senses interact and yet do not. Interacting brings involvement, yet each keeps its place. So, if we go deep into difference, there's oneness. There's oneness. If we go deep into oneness, there's difference. If I can recognize how different I am from you, and just accept our difference, then a closeness comes up, arises. If I can't accept our difference, because you should really be like me, you are weird. As long as you are weird, we're not one. But if I can radically accept you just as you are, then we're one already. We're one. How many relationships have failed because both people are trying to be the same, trying to live up to the other's way of being because the other says their way is right, or whatever this is? How many relationships have failed? How many marriages have failed? How many friendships have failed? So for Americans, It's harder to feel the oneness side than for Asians, because our culture is oriented to delivering the seduction of difference, the seduction of individuality with our pioneer spirit, with our laissez-faire, maybe some people would say not laissez-faire enough, capitalism. So it becomes the job of Zen practice to show us oneness, doing things together, sitting together, chanting together, living together, doing things together, so that we can realize this wonderful authenticity of being completely different and completely the same simultaneously. Some people's work is more in the dull, D-O. That's oneness. And some people's work is more in the separation, right? Some people really need to give to others to have they're too enclosed. They need to practice oneness. They need to practice giving to others. They need to practice extending themselves, taking risks, being loving. Extending. Some people need to practice the opposite, taking care of themselves so they can give to others. Some people don't take good care of themselves. They're just giving all the time, and they're burned out. They need to take care of the sun so they can manifest the dough. And sometimes some of us are back and forth. We need to pay attention to this. That's a Sandokai. This is shaking hands of difference and oneness. Just shake hands. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about it line by line, but I'll probably skip a couple lines because it's a nice day outside, and Mother's Day, and all that stuff, right? While human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. Well, human faculties are sharp or dull. So Suzuki's comment on this is, He was the dull guy, my teacher, Suzuki. He was the dull guy. All the other students, if you've read Crooked Cucumber, a few of you have. How many of you read Crooked Cucumber? Yeah. Okay, he was the dull guy. All the other students were smart enough to get out, to get away from that rancorous, cranky teacher. But he wasn't smart enough. He had no place to go. He was the dull guy. So, from his point of view, sharp or dull, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Although I think he was a little prejudiced towards dull, actually. So when I was having a hard time with my Zen practice, a hard time with my sitting, he said to me once, don't worry. He said, I know you're having a hard time. I know. People think teachers are really intuitive when they sense their students are having a hard time. You don't have to be very intuitive. You don't have to be very intuitive at all. All you have to be is pay attention, and you can tell. Everybody thought, oh, he's always reading people's minds. I don't think so. I was just watching. He was just paying attention to their affect and their countenance and their voice and whether they showed up or not. You know, duh. So anyway, I was having a hard time, and he intuited with his profundity that I was having a hard time. And he said, yes, I know you think you're not very good at this. Yes, I know you think you're not very good. He said, but that might be better. That might be better. You might have a better chance because you know that you can't get anything out of this at all. That might help you open up to no getting, where you have everything already. That's what he said. And it didn't help me at all. It just made me mad. At that moment, it made me mad. Later, it helped me a lot. But that moment, it made me mad. By the time I met my teacher, he was willing to be himself. Dull or smart or funny or stupid, he was willing to be himself. We're so busy trying to be someone, trying to distinguish ourselves, trying to be heroic, trying to calm our minds, trying to be sane, instead of just being ourselves. That's the greatest risk, to be ourselves. Greatest risk. But what are we risking, really? Is it really a risk? Is it really a risk? While human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. So this is about the struggle that's happening in the 8th century China. At the very beginning of Zen, there's already a struggle. There are already rival factions. Ooh, isn't that disappointing? I'm still disappointed by it. I am. Couldn't we do better than that? Can't we do better than that? After all, one is shaking hands with difference. Can't we do better? But we don't do better. And we just have to shake hands with our frailty. Anyway, so already here's the beginning of Zen. And they're having the northern school and the southern school. Immediately they invent Zen, because they just invent it. And then they have the northern school and the southern school, who are vying. And I'm not going to talk about this today, but those of you have heard me talk, many of you, about the northern school poem versus the southern school poem. The northern school poem, the body is the Bodhi tree, the mind a mirror bright. Be careful to wipe it clean and let not dust alight. And the Southern School poem, the body is not the Bodhi tree, nor the mind a mirror bright. Since from the first no things exist, where can dust alight? Tricky. He's tricky Zen guys, huh? Zen guys and girls. So anyway, he says, there are no other way has no northern or southern ancestors. Dull. Oneness has no northern or southern ancestors. It's not clinging to one side or the other, Buddhism or Christianity or Dharma Fields or MZMC or whatever, it's not doing that. Just shaking hands. Well, if human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. The subtle source is clear and bright. The branching streams flow through the darkness. The subtle source is clear and bright. The branching streams flow through the darkness. Subtle source, ideogram in Chinese, clouds and water. Clouds and water sense that are over in St. Paul. But don't go there. That's the way southern school. It's so southern, you'd have a bad time there. There are mosquitoes, and everybody thinks their way is the best. Don't go there, right? Isn't that right? Don't people do this all the time? Don't I do this all the time? This is a human situation. If we can just laugh at it, we can let it go. We don't have to make a big deal out of it, right? Anyway, ideogram for subtle sources, clouds and water. Clouds and water. What better metaphor for oneness and difference? Difference and oneness. Can you just rest on that? Can you just enjoy that? Can you just appreciate that? Yes, yes. All the clouds are changing. They're always completely reflected in the water. Are they different or are they same? Separation and oneness. Shaking hands. So Dogen says, if you follow the river all the way back to its source, there are clouds. Dogen says, if you follow the clouds all the way back to their source, there is the river. Right? The subtle source is clear and bright. The branching streams flow through the darkness. So the word for branching, the ideogram for branching, means sects, schools, viewpoints, proliferations. So, the subtle source is clear and bright. The branching streams flow through the darkness. So all the branching streams manifest the subtle source just as they are. You just manifest it. So you don't have to spend too much time trying to find the best Zen center. If you want to spend a little bit of time on that, that's okay. But you will worry your poor little psyche too much. Because if their practice is sincere, then they're manifesting the subtle source just by being. All the branches. And there's really not that much difference between wholehearted centering prayer in the Catholic tradition and Zen. And really, if you go all the way into it, is there any difference at all? No. It's all one. But yes, they're different. But they're all one. Right? So don't worry. Don't worry. The subtle source is clear and bright. The branching streams flow through the darkness. So flowing through the darkness, manifesting the subtle source. And of course, we think if we do Zen practice for a little bit, we'll be much more fluid. We'll be much more flowing. But then, after we practice for a while, it doesn't seem like we got it to be any more flowing, to be any more fluid. Because it takes a while. It takes a while. And what we're doing is we're needing to see how calcified our fear body is. We need to see it. And only when we see how calcified our fear body is there a possibility to let go of it and really appreciate the flow and the change of everything. The fear body sticks so much But how can we let this go? How can we let this spirit body go? Well, one thing, through generosity and giving, whenever we're clinging, we just notice it. When we're feeling tight and small, we just notice it. And when our generosity is gone. So then we just can come back to that. We can just be with that gently and kindly, rather than say, I should be more generous. Then we got more constriction, right? More constriction. But sticking and clinging is the opposite of real generosity. What if we didn't? What would our lives be like if we didn't hold on to time? Oh, you guys don't have enough time. Nobody has enough time in the 21st century. Maybe they didn't in ancient Zen days, too. I don't know. We don't have enough time. 32 minutes for this. Yes, I'll be home for Mother's Day. I'll be home at 11:30. Well, do you really have to go? We got to da-da-da-da-da. Not enough time. Not enough time. Working longer hours, email continually, text messaging, et cetera, et cetera. These days, I even do emails on Saturday and Sunday. And my kids are keep saying to me, Dad, when are you going to start text messaging? You're out of it. And I said, well, then I'd have to be continually available. They said, that's right, Dad. It's okay. That's fine. But don't get mesmerized by it, please. Time, money, status, they're all constructs. They're all constructs. They're an important part of song. They're an important part of difference. But if you just get caught on them, you overlook big oneness, which is also tiny because it just doesn't know anything about big or small. So what changes for you if you really practice this way? Something will change for you if you really practice this way with sincerity. I can't tell you whether it will take you a month or 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. If you're too worried about that, you probably shouldn't do Zen practice. Sorry, go do something else. Go do some 21st century thing. But in Zen practice, we don't know. We just give ourselves. We just do this practice over and over again. Just dull. We're dullards. I belong to the dullard school of religion. That was my transmission. That's the true transmission. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just be who you are. So what if you completely let go of the body of fear? Is it possible? Maybe you could just let go of it for a minute, for a second. What would it be like if you let go of it for a second? Well, let's read about some of our Zen heroes, what some of our Zen heroes say. The film master asked Suzuki Roshi, this is my teacher, you know, he became a Zen hero. He's a Zen hero now. But when I knew him, he was just a little old man, and there were only a few of us, and he was kind of dull. It's true. Although he was brilliant in that dullness, completely brilliant. If you go into something dull, you will discover something incredibly shining in there that you couldn't imagine. You couldn't imagine. You'll discover it. I promise you. Anyway, so here's an interview with my dullard teacher after he got famous. They were doing a movie about my dullard teacher just before he died in 1971. He died a long time ago. The filmmaker asked Suzuki Roshi, do you still get sad sometimes? Suzuki Roshi answers, yes, but when the tears land, they don't grow roots. When the tears land, they don't grow roots. The Zen teacher, Tony Packer, who was on the other side of the country and never met Suzuki Roshi and didn't think anything of Soto Zen. She thought all this ritual was just stupid. Somebody asked the Zen teacher, Tony Packer, after she'd been teaching for a long time when she was very old, you come from Nazi Germany. How does that impact your practice, coming from Nazi Germany? What did Tony Packer say? I don't think it matters much, those details of the past. I don't give them much sun or water. Sandokai, shaking hands. Oneness and difference. Shaking hands at oneness and difference. If you follow the river The subtle source is clear and bright. The branching streams flow through the darkness. Grasping at things is surely delusion. Identifying with oneness is still not enlightenment. Grasping at things is surely delusion. Identifying with oneness is still not enlightenment. Identifying with oneness is still not enlightenment. So then we get all excited about oneness. You listen to me talk or you hear about Suzuki, you get all excited about oneness. Well, that's good. That's good. That's the way seeking mind to get excited about oneness. But don't get too excited about it. Because identifying with oneness is still not enlightenment. So after I had an experience of boundaries falling away, interpersonal boundaries falling away, opening to everything, wonderful experience of oneness, I had one, and then my teacher Suzuki, because he was a dullard, didn't say much to me about at all afterwards. No words of encouragement. Just help me move that stone. The same thing he'd said before I had it. Help me move that stone. But there was another teacher named, I won't tell you his name because I don't want you to, I'm going to tell you his name. I could tell you, I'll tell you his name. Another Zen teacher who was also came up to me and he said, "Oh, your practice is really good." He said, "You had an opening." He said, "Oh, I've had many openings." He said, "If you come with me, I'm going to open a center where the focus is going to be on having openings." Woo! Woo! Talk about the big seduction. In Zen, there is a big seduction sometimes, just like in Christianity. Somebody was on the make, and I almost got made. Big time. Big time. I almost did. I got, oh, whoo, wow. And then there's this dullard here. What's the choice? But I won't go into it today. I've gone into it other times. For some reason, I did stay with a dullard. I did stay with him. Grasping at things, grasping at any experience that you'd like to have, that someone else had, you get, it paralyzes you. It paralyzes you. Even if some wonderful idea of being generous or being open or being one, you get paralyzed by it, as I did, as I did. Grasping at things is surely delusion. Identifying with oneness is still not enlightenment. So when you feel pain, you say, "I'm in pain. I'm in pain." That's what we do routinely. We say that, "I'm in pain." But the naming adds to the pain. The naming adds to the pain. Is it possible just to open to the moment of the sensation of, ouch, right here in my toes? My toes are where I have sciatica. My sciatica manifests itself in my toes, believe it or not. Ouch, I can feel them right now. Without, I am in pain. Can we just do that? Can we do that? It's possible, you know. And then what? Then we don't treat it as my or mine. We don't treat it as my or mine. Well, we can use our breath to have a relationship with this pain. So that we're not clinging to the stories or views about this second and third toe on my left foot and how to get rid of it and how long it will happen and what I did wrong, how I could get out of it and why you don't have it and what your pain. You know, I meet with these old guys. We're old guys now who were at Zen Center in the early days. You know, we have breakfast once a month. I won't tell you where because you'll probably eavesdrop. but we're so old you wouldn't even notice us anyway. So, and you know, what we talk about the whole time, being old guys who started sitting when we were young and blew out our knees and our ankles, we talk about our pain most of the time. That's what we talk about. That's what old guys do. I don't know about old women. I don't hang out with old women. But old guys talk about the pain. So there you go, the human situation. But don't get so serious about this, old guys, old women. It's stuff that you're exaggerating, you're magnifying. they're magnifying something very simple and actually quite wonderful, because it's something that is. Something, anything that just is fine as it is. And even this pain between the second and third toe are always changing and moving, going away and coming back. And nothing stays, except our minds. When am I going to get rid of this? 3 more aspirin. This doctor, this chiropractor, this acupuncturist. Then I get cranky. I don't even enjoy my grandchildren because I've got my second or third toe to worry about. This is the humans are like. Humans are pretty funny. That's why we do Zen practice. So we can just come back to shaking hands, separation, second, third toe, shaking hands with oneness. Just what is. Complaining about it is a way of covering up the sensations. The sensations are alive. There's life in that second and third toe. Great life. The whole Buddha nature is there. The whole thing. Complaining about it covers up that life. Covers up the joy that comes from just being there with it. So what Sekito is saying is that these conditions you're in right now are a perfect place to wake up. They're a perfect place to wake up. The worries you have, the troubles you have, your body, your toes, climate change, the tea party. This is the perfect time to wake up. This is a perfect time. That's our teaching. That's the teaching of San Dokai. To fully know suffering by sitting. That's our practice. To fully know suffering by sitting quietly doing nothing. That's our practice. It allows us to wake up. And the space that we touch when we're doing our sitting practice, there's always a little bit of space between those thoughts. I don't care how fast they're going. How fast, I've often talked about a freight train out of control. I know. There's always a little space between those boxcars. There always is. Just a little space. Just a little gap between your obsession. One obsession and another. One compulsion and another. And that's the shaking hands between separation and oneness. Right there in that gap. Right there in that gap. But fear makes us doubt our gifts. We squash our creativity. We leave behind our dreams. We think we can't realize them. We can't realize them. But our practice is to make fear our friends. To make fear our friends. Fear that is not fully seen creeps into your minds, takes over your body. Once you learn to recognize the fear, how it drives your choices. You can choose differently by letting aliveness, letting enthusiasm, letting wholeness and love guide you. But you don't need all those fancy words. Forget those words. You don't need those. Just recognize the fear. Come to know the fear. And the small, fear-fueled self loses its power. Loses its power. So, for the sake of this talk, I am saying that there are three styles in which the fear body presents itself. And these, we could say, relate to the three poisons, but I won't get into that this morning. And this is based on my experience with lots of people over the years. The three main styles of the fear body manifesting. So, withdrawal. Withdrawal. When we're scared, we withdraw sometimes, right? We withdraw. I was a gifted child who got scared shitless by being a gifted child. You would think not, but yes, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't do it anymore. Everybody expected me to be a certain way.
So I withdrew, completely withdrew. I thought, well, if I don't study anymore, if I don't even show up at classes, or if I sleep in classes or goof off in classes, then I'm safe. So I constricted the fear of body to feel safe because of the fear of failure. So we withdraw. In many, many different ways, we withdraw. And I actually did that for 6 years. 6 years. 6 years.
And the second style is manifesting the fear of body is that we lash out, we strike out. You know that pretty well. Some of you know it more than others. Some of you do the withdrawing more, some of you do the lashing out more. Of course, culturally, men do the lashing out more and women do the withdrawing more. But this is 21st century, so it's not so much like that anymore. It was like that when I was a kid, right? And so that, we do that, right? We protect ourselves, we protect this body of fear by striking out. Find out, I heard that Steve Hagen at Dharma Fields was doing such and such. Oh, how can I do it better? How can I do it better? You know, that kind of thing, right? And doing better is fine, but it needs to be done sort of loosely and openly because we all want to do better. But we shouldn't get hung up on it. Well, you do get hung up on it. Just see the fear body when you get hung up on it. Of course you do. Everybody does. It's part of the fear body. And the third one is that we go numb. We go numb. So we either withdraw, constrict the fear body, go into our little hole. We lash out like some warrior, the great warrior. The U.S. There's a new book has come out by Rachel Maddow. Anybody know who Rachel Maddow is? I haven't seen it, but I'm really anxious to read it. And it's about how the United States has become a perpetual war state, a country that is perpetually at war, and how different that is than our history. Very interesting. Very interesting. So. Obama or no Obama, I mean, you may be a fan of Obama's, we are a perpetually war state from Rachel Maddow's point of view, and she's got a lot of data. So, anyway, so you're exhausted, the war body has exhausted you. The withdrawing, I mean, God, you can only stay in this hole so long, so you come out, you battle, and then the third one is you numb out. That's the third style, numb out. Numb out. Numb the fear body out. Enough withdrawing. Enough lashing out. I'm just going to be out here. I'm going to be shaking hands with oneness with 10 beers and, you know, a couple of joints, maybe a sex addiction. Addiction, maybe gambling. I don't know. I'm going to numb out. I'm TV, 32 hours of TV. Constantly needing to answer my cell phone till I can't even have sit for zazen for 2 minutes without having to worry about my cell phone. That's a good addiction, isn't it? So we numb out. We numb out. So those are three styles that we need to pay attention to if we want to become experts in our fear. This is what Zen is about. I'm sorry. You know, go to some other church if you don't like this. You become an expert in your fear. An expert. And then it loses its power. It does. It just loses its power. But this isn't an expert in analysis. This is not an expert in analysis. In paying attention. In noticing. In being available, in shaking hands with it just as it is, being one with it just as it is. So, three styles of fear, and then two components to fear in the Buddhist tradition. One are sensations, and the second is thought. So sensations and thought come together to perpetuate calcify the fear body. So in Buddhist meditation, often we pay attention to sensations. We pay attention to sensations. And especially when we're doing formal sitting, we can do that. We can do that. And we can pay attention to a sensation when it... just a second here. We can pay attention to a sensation, any of our sensations while we're sitting. And a lot of sensations come up. A lot of sensations come up. If we do pay attention to them, sometimes we might notice a constriction. And we could just, let's say I notice a constriction here, right here, in the center of my chest. That's probably got a fear relation. Probably fear related if it's a constriction. I don't have to think about it. All I have to do is, here, I'm sitting in Zazen anyway. Just notice it. Just give my kind attention to it. To its warmth, to its contours, to how it moves, to if it has anything to say. Our fear body is made up of a lot of sensations. And then we can begin to tap in and notice the seed of fear that's in our conglomerations of rigid sensations that we feel in our body. Usually any rigid sensation that stays there in your body in a constricted form is giving birth to a seed of fear or manifesting a seed of fear. So you can just notice. Don't have to do some intellectual... don't do an intellectual trip about it, please. Just notice it. Just notice it. And the fear body is pretty unconscious, but through Zen, through sitting, we begin to see it. We begin to see the unconscious part, not just the thought part. So that's pretty important. Pretty important part of Zen sitting, of any kind of meditation. Just notice the sensations. They're only physical. We don't have to create a story about them. Just notice them. And they all change, they all move, they all expand, they all contract. So that's the bodily part. And then the thinking part. The thinking part. Well, the pure body's thoughts are mostly about what? No. That's a fear body. No. In the military industrial complex, no. We're not going to let them get nuclear power. No. Because they're going to destroy us. No. With our friend who's competing with us, no. It's about no. They tell us we can't, we shouldn't, we aren't capable of. I'm not capable of it. No. That's the fear body. That's my way of Darwinian protecting myself from failure. From failure. But it also kills me. It kind of kills me. It kills me because I overdo it as a human being. So our thoughts convince us that we'll be judged, that we'll be rejected, that we'll be abandoned if we express something that's really deep in our heart. If we are authentically who we want to be. And it's acculturated out of us. It's acculturated out of us. But in Zen practice, we see this stuff. We just see it in a loving, open way. And it's the beginning of being free of it. The beginning of being free of it. Seeing is freeing. Seeing is freeing. Little by little. Little by little. Thoughts that tell us that we can't, we shouldn't, we aren't capable, they're not our true voice. They're not our Buddha nature. And all Buddha nature means is awake, our awake nature. They're not our awake nature. They're closed down. That's how we support the fear body. They pretend they know what the future will bring. And they assume only negative outcomes. They pretend that they know what the future will bring, and they only assume negative outcomes. What's actually true about the future? Well, it's true about the future. We don't know. We don't know. You don't know if you'll fail or feel overwhelmed, but your fear-fueled mind persuades you that you will. If you believe these thoughts, you get paralyzed. You just get paralyzed. The truth is, we don't know. So how about life just unfolding? How about letting it unfold? Why go one more minute believing these limited thoughts with dismal outcomes? Dismal outcomes. Pay attention to our minds so we can learn how they work. That's all Zen practice is. That's all it is. Nothing more. We become an expert, as I said last week, and as Ram Dass said years ago, in recognizing our own neuroses. Yes, we become an expert. And that's the beginning of freedom. The beginning of freedom. And then we're released from this gloomy future that hasn't happened. The future is pretty gloomy. Look at the state of affairs in this country, in the world. It's pretty gloomy. It's pretty gloomy. But if we do this practice, we're released from it because it hasn't really happened yet. And there's still infinite possibility. Infinite. You say, oh no, it's too late. Yeah. What do you mean it's too late? You're breathing. The sun is shining. You're here. You're alive. Even if your whole body is numb, you're still, your eyes still are numb. Even if you have to stay in bed 23 hours a day, you can look out the window. Wow. Wow. Right. Suzuki Roshi, at the end of his life, I just finished reading Crooked Cucumber thoroughly this time. At the end of his life, when he was dying, he was more cheerful than ever. He was, read it, he was having a great time. He was in incredible pain. I'm not talking about that. But pain's not as bad as you guys think. It's not as bad as you think. So, when I got this job that I have now, what I've had for 16 years, helping people with mental illness as a director, I was told that I should raise money from people because I couldn't depend on the public sector. And I thought, my God, I can't do that. My Buddha, I can't do that. I've never done that kind of thing. I might fail. I might get overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed just thinking about it. I'll have to work too hard. It will destroy the intimacy of my friendships with people. It'll destroy the intimacy. It'll be awkward. It'll be unnatural. Well, people will criticize me. They'll think I'm just out for myself, just out for my agency. I'm scared. This is always how we start these things, with the fear body. But if you do it, it changes. Everything changes. You take a risk. Move out of the fear body into the unknown. It's amazing what you can do. But you don't do it. It just happens. You don't do it. But you have to take a risk. So, when I was a young man and practicing with Suzuki Roshi, someone got this really, one of the hippy-dippy people or beatnik people I was practicing with, who wasn't so beatnik, found this land down in Carmel Valley where he said we could have a Zen monastery. And we had no members. We had no money. Oh, this place, compared with us today, that we were... We didn't even have jobs. And everybody thought, that's impossible. But Suzuki Roshi said, well, maybe so. Maybe so. Let's do it. Let's try it. He said, let's try it. I don't know anything. Let's try it. Let's try it. So he tried it. Tassajara Zen Monastery. Read about it. It worked. It made it. Here I was, sitting in this room in about 1979 or something like that, 1980. That's a dozen years after the San Francisco thing, right? I'm sitting in this room, and somebody's gone down and found some land to do to have a Zen monastery on five locations. Well, the farthest off one and the most expensive one is way down in the southeastern corner of Minnesota. And everybody on the board says, not that one. We can't take that risk. We've got to protect the Zen Center. Katagiri went down. We went down with him. He said, oh, wow, look at this. The beauty here, the sky, the way the mountains come together. He said, I don't know, but it seems wonderful. Shouldn't we try it? So, Hokyoji, Zen Monastery. We had many less members than we do here now. I was a membership chair. I was a pretty hard ass membership chair. You know, nobody's like that anymore. And I'm not supposed to be, so it's not my role to be. So you never know. With fear no longer driving you, what do you really want for yourself? How old are you? 40 years old? 50 years old? 55 years old? 30 years old? Your life's short. Don't be hypnotized by the fear of body. What do you really want in these next few short years? What do you really want? What do you want your life to be about? Harness the power of your fear. Harness it by knowing it. Then you can find your true voice, your true body. But without harnessing that body of fear and really becoming intimate with it first, you'll get squelched. You'll be always letting it squelch you. And then your life will be over. And you'll be regretting. You'll be feeling sad. So no matter how afraid you are, you may say, oh, my fear body is worse than Tim's. You don't know that. You didn't know me when I was a young man. You didn't know me. Ask my wife, who's been with me for 45 years. Ask my wife. No matter how you afraid you are, you can do this. You can do this. You can move into the unknown and do something that really, really expresses your Buddha nature, which isn't Buddha. It's your own nature. In the short time you have on the earth. The short time. So I want to finish with a word of encouragement about this very thing from a great Zen master. So when we encourage ourselves, when we go beyond our limitations, we're able to really move in the world, without trying to make a big display, but just move with aliveness. So here's Lewis Carroll on Mother's Day. Will you walk a little faster, said a whiting to a snail. There's a porpoise close behind us, and he's treading on my tail. See how eagerly the lobsters and the turtles all advance. They are waiting on the shingle. Will you come and join the dance? Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Will you join the dance? Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Won't you join the dance? You can really have no notion how delightful it will be when they take us up and throw us with the lobsters out to sea. But the snail replied, this is for you guys. The snail replied, too far, too far, and gave a look askance. Said he thanked the whiting kindly, but he would not join the dance. Would not, could not, would not, could not, would not join the dance. Would not, could not join the dance. What matters it how far we go, his scaly friend replied. There is another shore, you know. hey, there is another shore, you know, upon the other side. The further off from England, the nearer is to France. Then turn not pale, beloved snail, but come and join the dance. Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, will you join the dance? Will you, won't you, won't you join the dance? That's my invitation. Lewis and I and Suzuki Roshi are inviting you. We're inviting you. That's what I want to say this morning. Questions, comments, songs, stories, good morning, dances, dance.
I just want to say it was a very poignant talk you gave this morning. Good circumstances, my dad died and stuff like that. And I've been wanting to go to Florida for quite a while, but I know nobody down there. And so that's kind of a big step. So I can really relate to that fear factor about, you know, trying to make up things before they happen. So I just want to say that it was a very good talk this morning.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And have a good time in Florida. Anybody else? Anyone else? Anything? Okay.